Okay, we're on to agenda item revenue, paper number 7.
Agenda paper 7 discusses one issue emerging from the most recent TRG discussions in July in relation to the transition requirements, which we thought needed your consideration. Stakeholders raised questions on the definition of a completed contract and the accounting for those contracts after transition to IFRS 15. Paragraphs 7 to 16 of the agenda paper explain the issues and the views expressed by the TRG members. As explained in the paper, IFRS stakeholders at the TRG think that the transition requirements are clear. We've laid out our analysis of the transition requirements in paragraphs 17 to 26 of the agenda paper. In line with the IFRS stakeholders, we also think that the transition requirements in the standard are clear. The definition of a completed contract refers to transfer of goods or services, which is not the same as recognition of revenue. When an entity uses modified retrospective transition method and applies IFRS 15 only to contracts that are not completed contracts, the entity would continue to apply the previous revenue standards to account for any revenue arising from those completed contracts after the date of initial application of IFRS 15. As explained in paragraphs 27 to 31 of the agenda paper, the FASB tentatively decided to define a completed contract as a contract for which all or substantially all of the revenue has been recognized under the previous revenue standards. The FASB also decided to permit entities to apply the modified retrospective transition method to all contracts, that is including completed contracts. We recommend that the IASB does not undertake any standard setting in respect of these issues. With that, our first question to you is, do you agree with our recommendation not to undertake any standard setting, or do you want to propose amendments to IFRS 15 along the lines of the FASB's tentative decisions? If not, do you agree with the staff analysis of the transition requirements in Appendix C of IFRS 15?
Billy.
Just to make sure I understand what would be the outcome of following the FASB's proposal, a contract that is deemed to be not fully booked as revenue under the old standard on transition, that is what is left as revenue not yet recognized would never be recognized as revenue because it will be taken to retained earnings on transition. Or is that the outcome? Or
no, I mean, if the revenue which is not recognized is substantial, according to FASB's decision, the contract will not be a completed contract. So on transition, IFRS 15 would be applied to those contracts where revenue not recognized is substantial. But if revenue recognized is a very small amount, for example, a small sales returns reserve, they would still treat the contract as a completed contract.
Okay. And I think, Raghav, correct me if I'm wrong, to answer your question, please. So I think the first thing, as Raghav said, is there should be a very small population of contracts that, you know, under the FASB model where there would be revenue to recognize. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that if there is just that small piece, whatever, you know, the small piece is beyond substantially all, then I think you would continue to apply the old
standards.
The old standards to that, but it would be expected to be quite small.
Changwu.
Thank you. So my concern is divergence with their our standard and the US standard. If we decide not to follow FASB's amendment, that's one big factor we have to consider, but that was not clarified in the paper. So that one concern. Another thing is, it looks like FASB's proposal is a kind of amendment, really some big change of previous position of both boards. So why at this time is changing the previous positions of the FASB? So that's quite interesting. Could you explain to us why this some kind of change of the previous
position? If I could just mention on that. It seems they have not set as high a hurdle as we have to change, and that our attitude has been very much that during this process of the resource transition group, we're looking at clarification or where people don't understand what the answer really is. And that we wouldn't, our attitude was we wouldn't change what the standard said as a result of that process. Whereas I don't think FASB feel quite as strongly about that as we did. And I think the other factor, which is in the papers here somewhere, is their starting point is different from our starting point, so their standards are not exactly the same as ours at the beginning, and I think that gave them some extra problems as well.
And I think, sorry, I agree with Ian, and only to add as well, I think in terms of, I suppose, creating some change on transition, they're in a slightly different place because up until this point, or up until recently, the FASB standard couldn't be early adopted. So at least when they had proposed this change, they know it's not necessarily going to affect people that perhaps are, you know, have interpreted the words as they're written, and it might change that. Whereas for us, obviously, we allow early application, and we know there are IFRS entities out there that could already be, you know, either at the point of implementing or well through implementation, having, you know, read the words as they are interpreted.
But your point on divergence is correct, but it's divergence on transition. So
yeah, it will wash out eventually. Yeah, it doesn't create. I don't think it creates a permanent difference that will arise. But yes, it potentially will be a difference. It depends on the nature of the contracts. It depends on whether you actually adopt the modified retrospective approach as opposed to the full retrospective approach. So there's a number of variables there about to be accepted could be a difference.
Tak.
Thank you. I think we should live with divergence. And therefore, I don't think we should follow the FASB's amendment. So I agree with staff recommendation. So transition is the difficult area, as everybody pointed out. We had a different gap. And we are although we have a converged standard, we traveled from different places. So therefore, the transition should be different. So we should live with it. And actually, the big difference was about the concept of withdrawn standard. So reading from the paragraph 15, in the US, it is quite common that once the standard is withdrawn, then you can't use it. That is the concept. So therefore, we would have a loss in transit, loss in transition. So therefore, I do understand the US constituents' concern, and the FASB is going to address that. That's understandable. And the other thing is the difference of customer loyalty program. We have IFRIC 13, which deals with custom loyalty program, but this is not as clear as ours in the United States. So therefore, they have lots of concern. And for some industry, the amount of loyalty point is quite big. So then I can understand why FASB is addressing this issue. So that's why I understand the FASB's change. But when it comes to the IFRS, we have clear standard of IFRIC 12, so we don't need it. So we don't have the concept of withdrawn standard. In our idea, we can still use the standard, which is even if it is withdrawn. However, one thing I could say is that was not clearly written in our IFRS 15 or in the basis. So therefore, we could provide some educational activity to say that you can still use the IS 18 and 11 for the contract which has not completed. So that would be helpful to the constituents.
I think that came out of the transition resource group as well.
Yeah.
That discussion was had. And that
yes. And that would be helpful.
That's in today's discussion of itself.
Itself, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
If we say clearly that this view A, which received more support from our stakeholders, is okay with the thinking of the board, I think that would solve the problem.
Yeah.
Well, I guess to tee up and answer Raghava's questions, I think the staff has interpreted and analyzed the words in IFRS 15 correctly. So coming back to, I guess it's paragraph 32, I agree with your analysis. On further reflection, though, I don't like the outcome here. I don't like the answer. I don't like the way completed contract is construed. And so I have a preference for the FASB's approach because I think it eliminates potential structuring opportunities. And obviously, you know, to the extent you have cross-border M&A activity, it will not create discontinuities and misperceptions, which frankly could lead to, you know, hurting investors. The issue of, you know, some companies may have early adopted, relative to that potential downside, okay, and adopted using the modified retrospective approach, I don't think outweighs the broader consideration here of the benefits of being aligned with the FASB on this issue. And when I think of large, at least listed multinationals, I'd be surprised if many are well on the road, down the road of a modified retrospective approach. So, but I would assume that risk. I know that I'm contradicting the position that I took, and I agree there should be a high hurdle. When we began this whole debate, my view was we don't change the standard. We just add interpretation, we add clarifications, we don't change it. But in hindsight, I think this is a flaw. Now, would I call it a fatal flaw? No. But it's enough of a detraction in my mind and an invitation for bad outcomes that I'd prefer to go with the FASB approach.
I'm in a similar position to Ian. For me, I try to limit any changes to IFRS 15 to where there's a lack of clarity. And for me, I thought it was clear what the intention of the board was in the transition. I think it's helpful to confirm that we indeed are happy for people to continue to apply the old standards. And the process has probably hopefully achieved that. And I also, not just in the context of 15, and while of course it would be wonderful if we were fully converged, for me the stability point is a bigger one. And I guess the thing that at the back of my mind worries me is this idea of a stable platform, because I worry about the message we're sending to people who we always are encouraging to get on with implementation, to get processes underway. The quicker you are, the more danger you put yourself in if we're not giving them comfort that our hurdle for changing things is a very high one. And for me, I think that messaging is important.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah, thank you. Just to confirm, if I would paraphrase View A, it basically says you've done all the work you're supposed to do, and View B is you've collected all the cash you're going to collect, or at least booked all the revenue you're going to, and that's the central difference. We're basically at View A in our standard, I think, right? And we knew that you might have for a period of time old revenue standards existing for a period of time. There's nothing unclear about that, correct? I mean, to my way of reading this thing. But if you step back and putting aside what's in our standard or the FASB's going, what is your outreach to? Which is the easier to do if you're a preparer?
Good question. Part of the thinking behind coming up with the definition of a completed contract that we did was to actually reduce the number of contracts that needed to be transitioned to the new standard. That was the aspect of it. And it is true, you know, as highlighted in the paper and came up in the TRG discussions, in certain cases, determining whether or not the contract is completed will require a degree of judgment, particularly when you're looking at some of the license arrangements under IS 18. But in many other cases, I think it's relatively straightforward to have, you know, as you said, Gary, to know that you fully performed under the contract, even if you're not necessarily recognising all of the revenue. So that was the thinking behind why we defined it in terms of a completed contract rather than, why it was in terms of the performance rather than being all of the revenues being recognised. It was to try and ease the transition for people.
But if we stayed with View A, there's no lost revenue, correct? I mean, you'll eventually book the revenue, whereas View B, is you might lose some revenue, you know, when these transition, you know, the first years of implementation.
That's my question. And I don't think it makes sense to lose revenue.
I agree with that. Thank you.
Mary.
I think I'm closer to where Pat is in terms of agreeing with the staff analysis in terms of what the requirements of the standard are. And this issue has, you know, made me look again and say, stand back and say, do we think it's a good situation to have post-adoption financial statements carrying forward two different versions of revenue recognition standards, you know, the new standard that has been applied, and for hopefully, you know, at worst, a small batch continuing to have a previous gap applied. I'm not concerned with kind of the legalistic arguments that we're in here about how can you possibly apply a standard that's been withdrawn because you've adopted the standard that superseded it. That to me is a distraction. It's just, you know, is the resulting financial information important? Having said that, thinking about some of Sue's concerns about stable platform, encouraging people to get on it, I think I probably do end up coming back to the staff proposal, you know, and I've really been waffling back and forth about this one. Not to do something remembering Ian's high hurdle of change, especially at this point. But I think a couple of important things to me that I'd like to observe are, one, if you think that you have a contract where you have, and I apologize, I'm not going to use the right words because I don't have the page in front of me, where you have completed, but for some reason you have unrecognized revenue, if you conclude that contract is not complete, and you know, as defined here, then IFRS 15 applies not just to the unrecognized piece, but to the whole transaction.
That's right.
And it's important to understand that it's not just the residual.
Yeah.
It's true, as Philippe said in his comment, that if you conclude that the contract is not complete, and then when you apply the new standard, IFRS 15, it may be that the unrecognized piece is the adjustment in the cum catch calculation, but you are accounting for the whole transaction under 15, not just...
Yeah, you've restated the contract, but not presented.
Right. And if there... And I'm aware that... Sorry, this paper and the TRG discussion made me focus on a population I hadn't considered before, which is licenses, not those with royalty-based, but those where there's not a royalty-based, where I understand that there is some diversity in practice under IFRS today about whether a license is over time or generally or point in time. And I was just looking back, I think it's one of the old SICs, the 27, that some people pointed to say over time, because it says that you have, you know, this is in a different context, but it articulates the idea that an obligation either to perform or to refrain from certain activities or conditions of earning a fee received. And so that articulation might have pushed some people to overtime. Now, that, you know, if that same transaction would be point in time under new IFRS 15, I don't think you'd read that point in time, you know, conclusion under 15, back to your previous gap. If you concluded under your, you know, previous gap, so 11 and 18, I'm not recognizing the revenue because I might have to refrain from doing something or because I have to continue to make it available, then I think it's not a completed contract under, you know, the current versions of IFRS that you're applying. So having worried that this population for licenses, because of the diversity in practice, might be larger than we thought, I think it comes back in the end to being pretty small, and I guess I can convince myself that it's pretty much related to collectability issues that might have been the issue. So on that basis, I think we fall short of the high hurdle for proposing a change, especially at this point when we've already issued the omnibus exposure draft, you know, and that's out and in process. But I guess the last thing I'd cite is, if somebody thinks they have, for some reason, a big population of completed but not recognized, to think hard about whether the cum-catch approach is appropriate in terms of giving useful information to investors is an important point. We don't have that as an explicit test for making your selection of transition, but I think that that is something I would expect somebody
and
to consider.
I think that's a very important point, and it was one actually that at least some of our stakeholders made at the TRG discussion to say, look, if you were in a very strange situation whereby this rump of completed contracts had the potential effect, the runoff, if you like, from those contracts had the potential to, you know, distort your revenue trend, then of course that entity would think very carefully about whether or not to use that approach. So ultimately that could be a consideration in deciding between the modified retro and the full retro.
So ultimately I end up not objecting
to
that proposal.
So if we move to the question, the first sentence of question one, does the ISB agree with the staff recommendation not to undertake standard setting? Those in favour?
11,
12.
So that makes the second sentence redundant. And the second question, the staff analysis in Appendix C of IFRS 15. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Peter, if you'd like to take us on.